On this eighth day of November 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Beginning chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga. Text 1. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Anashita Karma Palam.
Anashita Karma Palam.
Karyam Karma Karoti Yaha. Sasanyasi cha yogi cha Nananagni in the Chakriya. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Sri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Anashita Karma Palam.
Anashita Karma Palam.
Karyam Karma Karoti Yaha. Sasanyasi cha yogi cha Nananagni in the Chakriya. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "One who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty." Purport. In this chapter, the Lord explains that the process of the Eightfold Yoga System is a means to control the mind and the senses. However, this is very difficult for people in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the Eightfold Yoga System is recommended in this chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of Karma Yoga, or acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. Everyone acts in this world to maintain his family and their paraphernalia, but no one is working without some self-interest, some personal gratification, be it concentrated or extended. The criterion of perfection is to act in Krishna consciousness, and not with a view to enjoying the fruits of work. To act in Krishna consciousness is the duty of every living entity, because all are constitutionally parts and parcels of the Supreme. The parts of the body work for the satisfaction of the whole body. The limbs of the body do not act for self-satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the complete whole. Similarly, the living entity who acts for satisfaction of the supreme whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. The sannyasis sometimes artificially think that they have become liberated from all material duties, and therefore they cease to perform agnihotra yagyas, fire sacrifices. But actually, they are self-interested because their goal is to become one with the impersonal Brahman. Such a desire is greater than any material desire, but it is not without self-interest. Similarly, the mystic yogi who practices the yoga system with half-open eyes, ceasing all material activities, desires some satisfaction for his personal self. But a person acting in Krishna consciousness works for the satisfaction of the whole without self-interest. A Krishna-conscious person has no desire for self-satisfaction. His criterion of success is the satisfaction of Krishna. And thus he is the perfect sannyasi or the perfect yogi. Lord Chaitanya, the highest perfectional symbol of renunciation, prays in this way. Nadanang najanang nasundarim kavitang vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shwade babatad bhaktidahai tuki tvahi. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. What I want only is the causeless mercy of your devotional service in my life, birth after birth. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakya Chukshu Unminatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance to him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this chapter will give in some detail the process of meditative yoga, Ashtanga yoga. Ashtanga yoga means eight limbs, beginning with Yama Niyama. Yama Niyama are the don'ts and the do's. Before you start any process, you have to stop doing all those things that are preventing you from doing it. So the first thing is the don'ts, the yamas. Then there's the do's. In Krishna consciousness, there are parallels to all of these things. Just like we have the process of surrender. There's a sixfold process of surrender. Anukulyasya sankalpa, pratikulyasya varjanam. That's the first two. accepting those things which are favorable to Krishna consciousness and rejecting those things that are unfavorable. So yama and niyama is just like that. We have regulations, which probably, those are the don'ts, the four regs, no illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating, and many others. Those are the main, and we have many do's, many rules. Those are the rules. We have rules and regulations. Rules, you know, chant Hare Krishna, 16 rounds, get up early, do this. There's hundreds of them. 64 main ones outlined in the Nectar of Devotion. So this dhyana yoga, or this meditative yoga, also has the do's and the don'ts. And then Krishna will give some of those. Okay? Go to the forest. You know? Don't have any sex completely. You know, completely celibate. Do sit on a certain kind of seat. And do, you know, practice pranayama. You know? And there are many subordinate rules for that. So before he gets to that description, he has some preliminary verses here. So the first thing is anashita karma palam. Now, way back in chapter 3, we learned about the problem with being attached to the fruits of your activity. The basic problem, you know, is given in the second chapter, where the soul is trapped in a material body, transmigrating, right? And although there are some little hints of pleasure there, and sense gratification, gross or subtle, the basic principle is suffering. The soul is in a material body, which greatly restricts who we are. We don't even know our potentialities, right? It's said that the soul, for instance, is as brilliant as the sun. I don't see anyone as brilliant as the sun. You know? But the soul is brilliant as the sun, but we're very minute, so it's all covered over, right? We're full of ananda or bliss. Well, you know that that's not true all the time, right? There's so many difficulties in this material world. And when you analyze it, they're all stemming from having a material body. And also the mind. The mind is also part of the material body, right? So the soul is going round and round and round in this round of birth and death. So that's a problem. That's the main problem that we have. So why is that? Then we have to, well, why is that? Why do we keep going around? Why can't we be liberated? And the answer is because we're bound by so many myriad desires, unfulfilled desires, material desires. And when we act fruitively, that's what the famous fruit of action means, desiring the fruit of your action, which is what's going, everyone's doing that. Then that strengthens those desires, right? You act in a certain way to get the fruit, you enjoy the fruit, and then you want to do it again, or you want to perpetuate that. But material world is not set up for that. Everything's changing. At a certain point, the fruit is out of your grasp. You can't enjoy it. Or the fruit is in your grasp, but you've lost the ability to enjoy it. You're too old now. You can't bite into the fruit anymore. The teeth aren't there. There's the perfect fruit. You can't enjoy it. So some way or other, either the fruit is gone or your ability to enjoy it is gone, but the desire is there. The desire remains. And not just one desire, but unlimited desires. And so those desires plus our karma, you know, the law of karma, as we act in the world to fulfill those desires, we may very well violate the laws of God, the laws of nature. And that's, those are other things that bind us. Those are subtle laws. So all of that keeps us coming back again and again. So the basic principle, the first principle is, well, how can we act in such a way so we're not attracted to the fruits? And we're becoming detached from those fruits, and we're eliminating latent karma that's building, you know, that's past things that we did. So that's karma yoga. Now here in this particular purport, karma yoga comes in like on the fifth line. You know, he emphasizes that karma yoga, acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. Now this is an expanded understanding of karma yoga. Karma yoga can simply mean that you act in such a way that you know you're working your regular job, but you understand that if I develop the attraction to this fruit, it's going to bind me. So you give a portion of the fruit, the money, for Krishna consciousness, for Krishna. Then that work that you perform is no longer karma, you see? And you're not attracted to that fruit to enjoy it anymore. It's a Krishna, you see? But it's rudimentary. It means that you may be forgetting Krishna while you work. But the basic principle is there. I know I should give, you know, to Krishna. And so you come and give. So in this way, you're working for jagya. Jagyartat kamano nyata loko yam kamabandha. This is the basic principle of work in this world. If you're not working for sacrifice, means if you're not working for Vishnu, sacrificing the fruit, then whatever you're working for is binding you. Loko yam karma bandhanaha. Tadartam kamagat. So he said, perform your duty, Arjun, in this selfless way. Give up the fruits. Give up the fruits. Yeah. But that's not enough. We have to come to the understanding of what we're doing while we're doing it. And so jnana has to be there. More and more cultivation of who I am, who Krishna is, what is the relationship, what is this world, you know? So that we're actually acting, as mentioned in chapter 4, that every act we perform is devoid of the desire for sense gratification. That's a pretty tall order, you know? But that's what it takes. Because the desire itself will bring you back, even if you don't enjoy the fruits. You see the question? So karma yoga, jnana yoga. And the fifth chapter talked a lot about Brahman, Brahman Nirvana. You remember that phrase? Brahman Nirvana. It kept coming up. So Brahman Nirvana, Prabhupada translates as liberation in the Supreme. Liberation in the Supreme. So that Brahman Nirvana means basically the Brahma Bhuta platform. It means beyond the modes of nature, and it means on Krishna consciousness platform. And you remember these two key verses. There's one main verse in the fifth chapter that we all have to know, called the peace formula. It's the last verse of the chapter. But before that, we get to some very illuminating verses. They're all illuminating, but these especially stick out of my mind. Where Krishna says, "Yehi sangsparjaja boga dukha yona evate." This is like a revolutionary statement, just those 16 syllables. What he says there is that the very pleasure that you experience from sense gratification, literally sangsparshaja. Sangsparsha means the senses literally touching their objects. Dukkha yona, that's the source of your misery. You see how revolutionary it is? Because everybody's running after that. And everyone's miserable. Who's really happy for any length of time? So why is it source of adyantamanta? Because it's temporary. It has a beginning, it has an end. But your desire to enjoy doesn't have an end. See the problem? Your desire to enjoy is constant. We're enjoying beings. We're part and parcel of Krishna, who's anandamayo byasat. He's made of bliss. He's always enjoying. And we're part of Krishna. And why aren't we always enjoying? Because we're not enjoying in relation to Krishna. We've cut ourselves off artificially from the reservoir of pleasure. But we still have that nature, and therefore we're trying to fulfill that in the material world. But adyantamanta. It has a beginning and an end. So he says, nateshu ramate buddha. The key is you have to be buddha. You have to be intelligent. The intelligent person doesn't take his pleasure there. Well, then where does he take his pleasure? That's in actually the previous verse. Vayasparsheshu asaktatma. Not attached, asakta, to the external touching of the senses with the sense objects. Vayasparsha, then where vindatyatmana yatsukam. Enjoying the pleasure within. All this Krishna conscious pleasure that we enjoy, and we have to enjoy some of it, otherwise we wouldn't be here, is coming from within. It's coming from inside. It's because Krishna's there. You're tapping in, as best we can, to Krishna within our heart. And the wonderful thing is that he's always there. Young or old, black or white, male or female, doesn't Chinese or American, it doesn't make any difference. We all have that reservoir of pleasure within us. The super soul is there. And so at any time, in any circumstance, we can be experiencing that. Even externally, in the most difficult situation. That's explained in this chapter, text 20 to 23. So, by vindatyatma, sab brahma yoga yuktatma. See this? Brahma yoga. So here comes yuktatma, linked up to the supreme Brahman in yoga. If you're familiar with Krishna conscious philosophy, it simply means devotional service. We're trying to link up to Brahman, the Supreme Brahman. The Supreme Brahman is Krishna, right? The supreme spiritual entity is a person. That's the foundation of this whole philosophy. And how to link up through yoga. What does that yoga mean? Oh, You know, hearing, chanting, remembering, serving. All the faculties that we have. The mind, the intelligence, the activities, everything. Under instruction of the Shastra and the Guru, Gurus, then we can link up. It's like now, we're linked up. If we read this book and we study this, you know, knowledge and hear this vibration, we're linked up to Krishna. There's millions and billions of other books we could study, but if you study this book, this is yoga. This is yoga. It's yoga. Vidyabhya, according to Kapila Muni, Vidyabhya Yoga Manga. He says this is the easiest form of yoga. Sitting in class. Just hearing about Krishna from devotees. From devotees. It's got to be from devotees. So, he says, Sabrahma Yogi Sukamakshaya Mashnute. Now, this is the key. You experience unbreakable happiness. Sukam akshaya mashnute, Krishna says. So the prerequisite is we have to always be in Brahman, linked up to the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, through the process of yoga, bhakti yoga. And then we can experience it. So back to our present verse. So, anashrita karma, not taking shelter of the fruits of one's activity, but performing one's duty. In other words, right at the beginning, he's telling Arjuna, I'm going to talk about this Ashtanga Yoga, but don't get the wrong idea. I don't want you to leave the battlefield and go off to the Himalayas to practice this Jnana Yoga. Karyam karma karoti, practice your obligatory work. But sasanyasi nanaragni na chakri. So in other words, sannyas and yoga doesn't mean giving up one's work. It means giving up one's detachment to the fruits of work. It means performing all the activities, but without the tinge of desire for it. Then where does the desire come from? That's explained in the purport. Prabhupada quotes from Lord Chaitanya Shikshastika. Nadanang nadanang nasundari. What is it that motivates us to do anything? You know, Mahatattva asked that question this morning. Well, it's desire, right? It's built in. You know, we eat. We have to eat something. We have to sleep, right? At a certain point, you have pleasure is coming. You know, all kinds of things. So there has to be a desire behind it. But here, Lord Chaitanya is going through a list of usual motivations, and he's saying, no, this doesn't motivate me. Nadanang, najanang, sundarib. No, wealth isn't motivating. That's a huge motivation all over the world. Right? Najanam, followers. Oh, I'll be the leader of something. Politics, you know, it never ends in America now. It's always political season somewhere. And now there's 3 years that have the campaign for president. So they want followers, you know. Political party, that's it. No. It's a sundari, the opposite sex. No, he says. Kavitam va. Kavitam can mean different things. It can mean the power to speak beautifully or write beautifully, materially things. That's kavitam. I mean, Kaviraj Goswami. Kavi means poetry. Or the heavenly planets described in wonderful language. No. It's all no. And he addresses him Jagadisha. You know, this is actually a kind of a generic name for Krishna. You know, it means the Lord of the universe. If you believe in a God who isn't the Lord of the universe, then there's no God at all. So he says, next verse he talks about the son of Nanda. But here, Jagadisha Kamiye, I don't want any of that. And then it's implied in the third line, Janmani Janmanishure, again he addresses him as Ishwar. Birth after birth, that means I don't want liberation. So these are the things that motivate people. What's left? Love. Bhavatad bhakti dahoitiki. All I want is unmotivated. Unmotivated. In other words, no material motivation. Devotional service to you. So if there's no selfish motivation for this devotion, what's left? Love. That's also a big motivation in this world, but it's misguided. You know, it's tragic because you're motivated to love somebody. And then but again, Adyantamanda, it has a beginning and an end. You know. I mean, I remember the most pure love, you know. I love my mother. I remember that. I can remember that. You know, I love my mother. But then over time, you know, it becomes attenuated. I mean, I always love my mother. But not like when I was 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. You know. And the same thing on the other side. You know. Any loving relationship here, which is really, you know, what makes life bearable, is has a beginning and an end. It's like a parabola, unfortunately. So, but it doesn't hold true for Krishna. If we can reestablish that relationship, that loving relationship with Krishna, it never ends. It's ever fresh. You can't even imagine it. It's inconceivable. Ever increasing. You know, the intensity of it. Soul to soul, without all of this intervening matter. That's what we want. So, he says, Bhavatar Bhakta Dhoita Kitri. So, in this age, the way to practice yoga is Harinam Sankirtan. That's actually the way. What is that? Kute yadhyayato chayato vishnum tretayam yajatomakai dvapadam padicharyayam kalotad harikirtanat. Very important verse, 12th canon. It says, kute, the kute yoga is another word for satya yuga. Kute yuga, excuse me. So what was the process? Dhyayatam. It's a jhana yoga, meditation. The Treta Yuga, the mode of passion gets a little bit inserted there. The Krita Yuga, Satya Yuga, mostly almost all mode of goodness. But then there's more tinge of passion, elaborate sacrifices, huge things, Brahmins, fire, you know. We don't even know. You know, to be able to chant these mantras perfectly with perfect intonation and pronunciation. They have the mantra chanters, the Brahmins, then they have a whole set of other referees who just listen, and if there's a mistake, they stop them. Redo, you know. Can you imagine? We can hardly even eke out these little verses from Bhagavad Gita. We're not qualified. So, but in those ages, you know, mountains of grain and ghee pouring in, you can imagine. They went on for days or years or 1,000 years or whatever. You know, that's Treta Yuga. Okay. Then Dwapara Yuga, more mode of passion, a little more ignorance. So, now, elaborate deity worship. You see some of the relics in the South India, beautiful temple, big temples, Rameshwaram and Sri Rangam and stuff like that. But it's not like it was in the old days. In the old days, you know, everyone would come. You had real jewels and the gold and everything, very lavish. You know, here we have it's beautiful, Radhagiri and Hari, but it's not like it was then. So, but at this age, kalotad harikirtanat, the same thing they got from in Satya, Treta, and Dwapara, and those specific yuga dharmas, we get in this age from congregational chanting of the holy name. We have to have faith in that. You know? And when there's a kirtan, don't neglect it. Don't think, oh, I have something else to do now, I can sneak out. That is the yuga dharma. That's where we're getting our energy to do everything else. Japa is essential. But Harinam Sankirtan is even more essential. Yeah. So that's this whole, you know, that's the process. So that's why we have this Shikshastika. So we'll read about that. And now the first couple of verses are talking about sannyas. So sannyas and yoga go together. The real sannyasi is also the real yogi. You can't be one without the other. Yoga without sannyas is a farce. Sannyas means full renunciation. And sannyas without yoga is just a source of misery. That's mentioned elsewhere, I think, in the 5th chapter. If you try to be a sannyasi, but you're not a yogi, you're not linked up to Krishna, then you're really in trouble. You know, you've given up all the material thing, pleasures, so to speak, but you're not a Krishna bhakti, you'll never make it. You'll never make it. You'll make a farce out of it, and that's why sannyas is not even recommended in this age. You know, although for preaching purpose, Bhaktisiddhanta instituted it. You know, we should understand the six Goswamis were not sannyasis. They were babajis, what we would call babajis today. You know, they didn't go around and stick city to city to preach, you know, like that. They stayed in Vrindavan, they wandered, they had the loincloth, you know, and, you know, they were renounced, obviously. But they weren't the traditional sannyas ashram, not as Bhaktisiddhanta established it. Because traditionally, the sannyasis would be the Mayavadis. That's why Lord Chaitanya, you know, took sannyas, and believe it or not, from someone who was titularly a Mayavadi, Keshava Bharati. Yeah, because that's what was available. Because he wanted to preach. He wasn't going off to Vrindavan and just, you know, of course he did try to go to Vrindavan at first, but anyway, it's a little complicated with Lord Chaitanya. But he was the emblem of sannyas, there's no question about it. And but the Goswamis were a little different. You know, they just wandered in Vrindavan, Babaji type. But in either case, renunciation is there. The farther limit of renunciation was shown in all cases. All right, any discussion on this first verse? One has to perform one's duty with the spirit of sannyas and being linked up. Yes, Prabhu? No, they were preaching locally,
okay.
But they didn't have the accoutrements of the sannyas ashram. They didn't have the danda. There's no dandas there,
okay.
And they didn't go city to city and or wandered in different places throughout the country. They stayed in Vrindavan. That was their assignment. They visited Jagannath Puri. That's another thing to see Lord Chaitanya, a couple of, but they. They were known as Goswamis, but not sannyasis. You know, the traditional fourth order like that. You know, they immediately took renounced life, and they went to Vrindavan and lived that life. That had become known as the Babaji life, with the little half loincloth and just chanting all the time. So Bhajanandi, yes. Their preaching was mostly the writing of the books, you know, and the resurrection of the Leela Stans, places of pastimes, and the temples that they were able to build. When some kings came forward, they built the temple. You know, they oversaw that. That was their preaching. Okay, text 2. Yang sannyasam iti prahu yogam tam viddi pandava na yasanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kashtana. What is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, O son of Pandu. For one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. A real sannyas yoga, or bhakti, means that one should know his constitutional position as the living entity and act accordingly. The living entity has no separate independent identity. He is the marginal energy of the Supreme. When he is entrapped by material energy, he is conditioned. And when he is in Krishna consciousness, and when he is Krishna conscious or aware of the spiritual energy, then he is in his real and natural state of life. Therefore, when one is in complete knowledge, one ceases all material sense gratification or renounces all kinds of sense gratificatory activities. This is practiced by the yogis who restrain the senses from material attachment. But a person in Krishna consciousness has no opportunity to engage his senses in anything which is not for the purpose of Krishna. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person is simultaneously a sannyasi and a yogi. The purpose of knowledge and of restraining the senses, as prescribed in the jnana and yoga processes, is automatically served in Krishna consciousness. If one is unable to give up the activities of his selfish nature, then jnana and yoga are of no avail. The real aim is for a living entity to give up all selfish satisfaction and to be prepared to satisfy the Supreme. A Krishna-conscious person has no desire for any kind of self-enjoyment. He is always engaged for the enjoyment of the Supreme. One who has no information of the Supreme must therefore be engaged in self-satisfaction, because no one can stand on the platform of inactivity. All purposes are perfectly served by the practice of Krishna consciousness. So this makes the point more explicitly that really sannyas as a description, we have to have, you know, define our terms. Sannyas is an ashram, a formal ashram, right? That comes after vanaprastha ashram, right? The brahmachari grihastha vanaprastha sannyas. But Krishna is not speaking about that here. He's speaking really of the attitude of sannyas, of the real meaning of sannyas. Nyas means renunciation. Sannyas means complete renunciation. But there, it has to be accompanied by yoga. That's the point. Yogam tam vidipan. He says they're actually one, that to be that the same as yoga. Because without giving up the selfish desires, there's no question of yoga. Yoga, you know, I mean, yoga is also, you know, you have to define your terms. There's popular yoga, you know, there's hatha yoga. You can do hatha yoga without being detached. But that's not really the ultimate goal of yoga. You know, the idea is that all of these practices have side benefits. You know, the practice like this pranayama, for instance. I remember I used to do pranayama. I'm doing pranayama. You know, count the breath up in, hold the breath a little bit down. Psh, wonderful. I felt very relaxed. I felt very clear-headed, you know, balanced and health benefits. Great, you know. But that's not the end of, that's not the real goal of pranayama. The problem is that the process is diluted or diverted. So you have yoga studios all over the country, you know, and you can practice a little pranayama, stretching, bending. I feel wonderful, you know. It's great. You can meet nice people, learn about vegetarianism. But what about the ultimate goal of yoga? That's not going to help you ultimately. You can have a healthy body for a while, you know, very balanced, cleansed internally. But that if you're not cleansing the heart, if you're not really reforming, then that becomes another kind of material desire. After all, just to be healthy and happy and enjoy the senses is a material desire. It may be more in the mode of goodness, you know, but that's not going to get you out of the material world. It's not going to solve your real problem. So all of these different parts, you know, living a moral life, yama niyam, you're known as a good person, you know, virtuous. You can, you know, do charity work. So all of the different parts of this yoga can be used for material things. Even the meditation, these siddhis that come, if you know, they're practically unimaginable. But, you know, to be smaller than the smallest, lighter than the lightest, walk on water, guess who was a yogi? Jesus. You know, you can do that. Even more amazing things, you know, to create a planet. I mean, who can imagine these things? But that's what, you know, that's the potentiality that you have as a spirit soul. You know, if you refine and direct and focus these energies. But ultimately, that's also personal. It's personal desire. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakala, ashanta. Lord Chaitanya declares that you'll never get peace. Because there's always a greater yogi than you. There's always someone who has more siddhis. Right? Durvasa Muni, was he a happy and peaceful person? No. He had such powers. Prabhupada said once in a lecture, I heard this, that he was so powerful. Or maybe it was Vishwamitra. I think it was Vishwamitra, who was also a great yogi. He could have a tree, create a tree from which human beings are born as like fruit. Prabhupada said. Good. But that, you know, then, but he was envious of Vasishtha Muni. Vasishtha was a great yogi. He had a cow who defeated, there's all these stories, you know. Surabhi cow. He didn't have the Surabhi cow, you know. These processes can also increase your false ego. You see? It can increase your rage, you know. Vishwamitra became angry, and so did Durvasa. You know. So where's the progress? Krishna consciousness, here's the thing, is that if you study the Kapila Muni's teachings in the Bhagavatam nicely, and you know other parts of the Bhagavatam, you'll see that the key element, the interface, what's keeping us bound in this material world, the source of the whole thing, is the false ego, is the false sense of self, right? The sense that I'm separate from Krishna, I'm this body. I may have an animal body, I may have a God's body, I may have a human body. Whatever it is, I'm identifying with this body and forgetting about Krishna. But the root of that body is the false ego. The root of the senses and the whole thing develops on the basis of the false ego. So from day one, from the beginning of your chanting, your first mantra in Hare Krishna, and understanding the philosophy and bowing down and washing the pots, you're attacking that false ego, which is built on pride and I'm separate, you know, and I'm powerful, I'm the enjoyer. You see how, so bhakti yoga goes to the essence of why we're here. And if we just understand, even theoretically, but we have faith, that yes, I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm not this body. Life is not meant to enjoy my senses. It's meant to serve Krishna. That's my constitutional position. And if you actually live like that, even for a little bit, and chant the holy name, become conscious of Krishna, just think how conscious we are of our own bodies. Every little pain, right? Every little pleasure, a little too hot, a little too cold, right? That's how conscious we have to be of Krishna. But it's Krishna's body, Krishna's form, Krishna's lotus feet, Krishna's name, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Yes. That's what Krishna consciousness means. Every moment. To think of Krishna and basically forget about a body, you think of it as a tool or as a machine, an instrument, a fine instrument for serving Krishna. That's our nature. You know? And then, you know, Krishna's pastimes become so enjoyable for you. You know, just hearing about them. Because you're identifying yourself as a servant of Krishna. The whole thing becomes, you know, transformed. So, but without that, then all the other stuff doesn't mean anything. Without the Krishna consciousness, the renunciation, the dharma, the virtue, all of this business becomes just a way of enjoying different modes of nature. You know, sense gratification in the mode of goodness, sense gratification in the mode of passion, sense gratification in the mode of ignorance. You know, whatever it is, the modes are still working. And you're still trapped. So the idea is, you know, is to cease the sense gratification. But the only way is by intense devotional service. And then you forget about it. All right, any questions on this? This all makes perfect sense. Aruruksha muner yogam karma karanam uchyate yogharudhasya tasyaiva samakaranam uchyate. For one who is a neophyte in the Eightfold Yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. Purport. The process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to a ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. This ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization in pure spiritual life. According to various elevations, different parts of the ladder are known by different names. But all in all, the complete ladder is called yoga and may be divided into three parts, namely jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, and bhakti yoga. The beginning of the ladder is called the yoga ruruksu stage, and the highest rung is called yoga rudha. Concerning the Eightfold Yoga System, attempts in the beginning to enter into meditation through regulative principles of life and practice of different sitting postures, which are more or less bodily exercises, are considered fruitive material activities. All such activities lead to achieving perfect mental equilibrium to control the senses. When one is accomplished in the practice of meditation, he ceases all disturbing mental activities. A Krishna conscious person, however, is situated from the beginning on the platform of meditation because he always thinks of Krishna. And being constantly engaged in the service of Krishna, he is considered to have ceased all material activities. So the idea is that, you know, at the beginning you have to learn how to sit. You're learning how to sit. You know, the pranayama and the pratyahara. Pratyahara means withdrawing the senses from the sense objects. You know, and all of these asanas that you do is meant to make the body strong so you can sit. And if you sit with your head and neck and back in a straight line, you know, with a peaceful mind, then you can think of Krishna more easily, or think of your object of meditation. So that's what it's meant here. There's karma karan, there's things to do. You know, you have to bend this way, bend that way. This is all doing, pranayama, it's all doing something. But then when you get a little more advanced into dharana, dhyana, dharana means concentration. It means, you know, mind is moving, bring it back. Moving. Krishna says like that. From whatever and where, you know, wherever the mind goes, bring it back under the control of the cap as self. That's me, because Krishna. And so that's concentration. But then at a certain point, it's steady. You're actually focusing, you know. And if you're really focusing, without any possibility, that's samadhi. You know, it's just a progression like that. So at that point, you're not doing anything. You're just sitting there. I mean, the senses aren't doing anything. The mind is simply flowing and you're completely connected. So that's the idea. If you get advanced, then there's nothing external to do. Now, how does that relate to Krishna consciousness? Well, our meditation, you know, is like mostly japa. Right? It's kirtan and japa. They go together. But that which looks most like meditation is our japa chanting. And there, you know, sit properly, Prabhupada said in his eternal japa tape. It helps. All the things that help us to focus on the sound of the holy name, which is non-different from Krishna, completely Krishna. You know, sometimes, you know, we ask, well, how do people fall into the material world? But we do it, from the spiritual world. We do it every day. By the mind thinking there's something more important to think of than Krishna, than the holy name. That wandering of the mind is our rebellion against Krishna, isn't it? It's the mind. The whole thing is the mind in any yoga process. So we're trying to train that mind to just to stop and let the holy name enter in on, you know, every syllable, 32 syllables. I remember when I was in L.A. last, somehow, some previous time, I had said something about joining the 32-syllable club. And this really struck some bhakta up there. And he said, oh, so thank you for that. You know, I'm trying to be part of that 32-syllable club. You know, because when you chant Hare Krishna, I don't know about you, but sometimes you're really hearing the Krishnas, but the Hare's are you hearing, focusing on Rama, you forget, you know. But every syllable, you know, the mantra is as potent as a whole. You know, these mantras work as a whole, you know. I mean, the name of Krishna is always powerful, don't get me wrong. But the mantra as a whole has a certain, you know, special effect if you hear it, you know, as it is. And that's Krishna consciousness. You know? And then if we really try, we can experience that a little bit, and then the mind's going away. So we got to, that's sadhana, you know. That's practice. So, you know, that's why we have these special days, you know, and special pilgrimages, and we have the Kadashi, and to break out of the routine where we're kind of at a certain level of concentration and distraction and have more absorption. Go to Mayapur, you can chant all day. Nobody's going to stop you. Chant 64 rounds a day, you know. And everywhere you look, it's just Lord Chaitanya, it is Krishna. It's much easier to become absorbed, you know. And the idea is to try to bring that back and so to develop that as part of your, you know, you're at a different platform. So that's how we practice yoga. That's our yoga. And we shouldn't think we're missing out on anything. And that's why I always like to read, you know, this section here. By the way, just as a matter of passing, there are some wonderful tapes. My most favorite lectures of Prabhupada are on this chapter called the Yoga System tapes. Prabhupada gave these lectures in 68 and 69, I think. And there's a few from 66 that were included in the book. And it's all about this chapter. It starts from, he goes through the whole thing. And he's just wailing, you know, because he's in the middle of you know, the 60s, and yoga is becoming popular and this and that. And Prabhupada is trying to impress on the listeners, most of the, you know, his disciples at that time, that this is real yoga, you know. And here's the ins and outs of yoga. And, you know, he makes it very clear, as he does in these purports, that if you're really Krishna conscious, you're the best yogi. Krishna says the same thing at the very end of the chapter. You know, we're not missing anything, you know, in this yoga process, and all of the aspects of everything that we read about in this chapter has its relationship to Krishna consciousness. And so, when we get to 20 to 23, there he's describing the state of samadhi, and it's really wonderful because he says, "I'll never forget this. You enjoy through transcendental senses." You know, informed by the intelligence. I guess I forget exactly how he puts it. But that means in the spiritual body. Yeah, spiritual body. You know, we all have that spiritual body within, part of the soul. And so, and if once you achieve this state, you'll think there's no greater gain. You cannot be moved from it. You know, yim lab va lab chapanam labam munyate nadikam tataha. Once getting it, yim labdam chapanam labdam, that you'll think there's nothing else greater. And even in the greatest difficulty, you won't be moved. You know, what's the greatest difficulty? Time of death. Yeah, you'll be fixed. You know, it's something to really inspire you to become Krishna conscious. And the wonderful thing is that all of these states, which are very difficult to achieve with this Ashtanga Yoga, you know, the whole point of the chapter at the end, Arjuna says, "I can't do it." You know, he says, "Ah, it's impossible. It's like trying to control the mind. It's like trying to control the wind." He says, "Yes, you can do it with practice." I said, "Well, okay, suppose I fail. I won't be in either state. What happens if you fail?" "Okay, you get born again into a good family, rich family, Brahminical family, yoga family. Pick up where you left off." "All right, fine." But that's not, Arjuna's not very hopeful. That's the whole point. And at the end, the very end, he says, "Oh, don't worry. You know, the greatest yogis are those who are always thinking of me within their hearts with great faith and great love. Well, that's Arjun. Arjun loves Krishna. He's a friend. So then we go on 7. Then 7 through 12 describes basically bhakti. It's the heart of the Gita. Prabhupada said this is the heart of the Bhagavad Gita. It's chapter 7 through 12. But all of these things that are mentioned in 6, you know, instruction for meditation, concentration, and especially those verses 20 to 23, they're very encouraging for the practice of Krishna consciousness as well. That's all we have time for. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.